December is a fateful month in our history as a nation. On December 7, 1787, Delaware was the first state to ratify the Charter of our Liberties, the Constitution of the United States of America. 154 years later, to a day, this nation was faced with the question whether a free people, living under the guarantees of that Constitution and protected by its Bill of Rights, could survive. On December 7, 1941, this country met a trial by fire under the massed onslaught of Japan and the European Axis powers. It was compelled to fight a two-front war as the totalitarian powers sought to encircle it in the West and in the Far East. In December 1944, our troops entered the Battle of the Bulge and successfully met that last savage attack by the Nazis. Less than a year later, a victory which we thought to be final was ours. Today, December 10, 1950, the Western world is again faced with the issue of survival. With the respite of but a few brief years, years themselves filled with turmoil and conflict, we are now engaged in a de facto war with Communist China. The scale of the conflict, the number of forces committed in North Korea, leaves no doubt that Communist China has taken up the sword against the United Nations and that we have an undeclared war in Korea. It is fitting that today, Sunday, December 10, 1950, should be set aside by the President of the United States as Human Rights Day, so that we may take time to think of our goals in the conflict and carnage that have scourged the world for the past two decades. Many of our boys now fighting in Korea have throughout their lives known of war. The Sino-Japanese War, the Italian-Ethiopian War, the Spanish Civil War, World War II, the war between nationalist forces and communist forces in China. There were but few years in the past two decades when full-scale war was not raging at some point on this globe. The nations of the West, including the United States, have of late been often charged with the lack of a positive ideology. It has been said that our approach has been negative instead of positive, that we must have affirmative goals if we are to appeal to the peoples of the world. I suggest that the preservation of our way of life, that our determination to realize the dream of man through the centuries, that his basic human rights shall be respected, is a positive goal of overpowering importance today. Democracy itself is but a means to the end of the preservation of human rights. Its vision of equality and liberty was conceived in the democracies of ancient Greece. It was Plato who said, "All men are by nature equal, made, all, of the same earth and by the same Creator. And however we deceive ourselves, as dear to God is the poor peasant as the mighty prince." And it was Aristotle who found that the basis of a democratic state is liberty, which, according to the common opinion of men, can only be enjoyed in such a state. The vision endured in ancient Rome. It was Cicero who said, "In no other state, save where the power of the people predominates, has liberty any home." Liberty, the sweetest of all blessings, and which, if it is not equal for all, is not liberty. The vision endured through the fall of Greece and Rome, through the strife and feudalism of the Middle Ages, and through the rise of the system of national states and the theory of divine sovereignty. Magna Carta in 1215, the English Bill of Rights in 1689, our Declaration of Independence in 1776, the French Declaration of the Rights of Man, adopted by the Revolutionary National Assembly of France in 1789, the Bill of Rights annexed to our federal constitution. These kept the vision alive during the passing centuries. In our time, we have seen the rise of the totalitarian state and its threat to the liberties of man, which, until this threat, seemed finally to have been secured through the struggle of centuries. And in our time, with the coming of the totalitarian state, we have seen, in the words of John Dos Passos, the pale files of arrested persons marched to the station, the bedraggled companies locked into freight cars, no food, no water, floor filthy with excrement, the sealed trains full of dying and dead, rumbling away into exile, isolators, extermination camps, the rediscovery of torture, the infliction of pain, an instrument of national policy. Murder become one of the industrial arts. The infliction of elaborate agonies part of the science of statecraft. These are the denials of human rights upon which the totalitarian state is founded. Can anyone say that the fight to rid the world of these practices, to bring to an end the extermination of peoples and the use of torture as an instrument of totalitarian justice, is a negative goal? What are these rights that have become such a part of our daily lives that some of us apparently cannot conceive of their absence? A broken Cardinal Menzenti testifying on a communist witness stand could tell you. Millions of displaced persons in Western Europe living a life of privation but nevertheless of freedom could tell you. Displaced persons who have finally reached our own community could tell you. It is Jörn Gostrein, a DP, speaking to an Allied interviewer. We stood at the cars, and soon the SS men drove us into them. 120 people into each car. The doors were shut. We have no food with us. And now we tried to sit down. When 80 people sat down, the others had no place to stand. And there were many people who were very tired. It was not possible otherwise. We stood over one another. We trampled on other people's fingers, and these people, of course, resisted and were striking each other, and so a panic ensued. It was so terrible that people went crazy during the trip, and soon we had the first death among us. We had more and more dead due to the heat in the car, and the bodies began to smell, and that is how we were traveling. There was a mass of insane and dead people in the car. And after 5 days of continuous traveling, we arrived in Regensburg. And when we arrived in Dachau, there were more dead bodies than survivors. It is Fela Lichtheim speaking. We passed the crematories, and we saw mounds and mounds of dead. It was unbelievable. Dead with whom the crematory could not keep up. There were mountains of dead, and from the air came all the sickness. It is Jack Matzner speaking. In Bergen-Belsen, I saw for the first time how people were burned on open piers. Apparently, the gas or gas piping stopped functioning. So they piled the people in mounds and poured gasoline over them and burned them on open piers. One got accustomed to such a sight as if it was something ordinary. It is terrible to say that. And even now, I can't conceive how I was able to bear this stench. which would not only come through the nose, but which would stick to one's palate as though it were something palpable. This repugnant, pestilential stench that filled the air. It is Abe Monblum speaking. The Lagerfuhrer caught her. And now I want to tell you about the sadism of that man. He did not care that it was a woman, a young girl. And he beat her, until he beat out her eyes with a whip. And that is the first time in my life that I saw such a beating. And I thought, that is the worst. I could not imagine that there may be something worse. I was 14 years old. I thought then, that is the worst that can be. But later I found that there were many steps beyond that, so many that one simply can't imagine. These are documented interviews with DPs, published by the University of Illinois Press in I Did Not Interview the Dead. The General Assembly of the United Nations has sought to set forth these basic human rights in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, approved without dissent on December 10, 1948, save only for the abstentions of Soviet Russia, five of its satellite states, and two other countries, Saudi Arabia and the Union of South Africa. On this, the anniversary of that date, let us take time to examine that document. The preamble to the Declaration of Independence and its statement of human rights has become familiar to every schoolboy in this country. Let us hope that the preamble to the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights will become familiar to every person throughout the world. If its words could be brought home to the peoples behind the Iron Curtain, which Russia will not permit, we would quickly find that they are far from a weak and negative approach. The appeal of those words to peoples everywhere is only too clear from the resistance to their spread by the communist leaders. Let us read those words. Whereas, recognition of the inherent dignity and of the equal and inalienable rights of all members of the human family is the foundation of freedom, justice, and peace in the world. Whereas, disregard and contempt for human rights have resulted in barbarous acts which have outraged the conscience of mankind. And the advent of a world in which human beings shall enjoy freedom of speech and belief and freedom from fear and want has been proclaimed as the highest aspiration of the common people. Whereas, it is essential, if man is not to be compelled to have recourse, as a last resort, to rebellion against tyranny and oppression, that human rights should be protected by the rule of law. Whereas, it is essential to promote the development of friendly relations between nations. Whereas, the peoples of the United Nations have in the Charter reaffirmed their faith in fundamental human rights, in the dignity and worth of the human person, and in the equal rights of men and women, and have determined to promote social progress and better standards of life in larger freedom. Whereas, the member states have pledged themselves to achieve, in cooperation with the United Nations, the promotion of universal respect for and observance of human rights and fundamental freedoms. Whereas, a common understanding of these rights and freedoms is of the greatest importance for the full realization of this pledge, Now, therefore, the General Assembly proclaims this Universal Declaration of Human Rights as a common standard of achievement for all peoples and all nations, to the end that every individual and every organ of society, keeping this declaration constantly in mind, shall strive by teaching and education to promote respect for these rights and freedoms, and by progressive measures, national and international, to secure their universal and effective recognition and observance, both among the peoples of member states themselves and among the peoples of territories in their jurisdiction. What are these basic human rights, as declared by this historic document? Are we so concerned with our affairs of the moment, the noonday meal, the daily paper, that we cannot take time to think a bit about these rights? Rather, the question which we face today as a nation is whether we can rise above the ease and comfort that our way of life has brought us and concern ourselves with those goals for which our forefathers gave their lives. The freezing cold of North Korea is as bitter to the GI as was that of Valley Forge to Washington's men. Death is as final to a wounded doughboy to whom a communist Chinese has set the torch, as it was to Patrick Henry when he said, "Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains or slavery? Forbid, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death." Everyone, asserts the Declaration of Human Rights, everyone has the right to life, liberty, and the security of person. To the slave laborer in a Siberian concentration camp, it says, "No one shall be held in slavery or servitude." To the victims of the Soviet secret police, it says, "No one shall be subjected to torture or to cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment." To a Judith Copland, it says, as our own federal court has just said, "No one shall be subjected to arbitrary arrest," and "all are equal before the law." Remembering the victims of Nazi sterilization, it promises that men and women of full age, without any limitation due to race, nationality, or religion, have the right to marry and to found a family. To the Catholic victims of communist religious oppression, it promises, everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. To those cut off from communication with the Western world behind the Iron Curtain, it declares, everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression. To the regimented, policed voting of communist regimes, to the peoples of East Berlin, East Germany, and Korea, it proclaims, the will of the people shall be the basis of authority of government. This will shall be expressed in periodic and genuine elections, which shall be by universal and equal suffrage, and shall be held by secret vote, or by equivalent free voting procedures. To submerged groups, it says, everyone, as a member of society, has the right to social security and is entitled to realization through national effort and international cooperation, and in accordance with the organization and resources of each state, of the economic, social, and cultural rights indispensable for his dignity and the free development of his personality. to everyone everywhere, it declares, everyone is entitled to all the rights and freedoms set forth in this Declaration, without distinction of any kind, such as race, color, sex, language, religion, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth, or other status. Today, we are confronted with the question whether we shall hold to those ideals. As to that question, there can be but one answer. We shall. But there is an even more fundamental and important question than that. Can we? To that, with equal confidence, I answer, we can. For there is a strength in an association of free nations, freely trying to achieve the values and goals of freedom, that has twice been tried in the crucible of a world war within our generation, and has come through victorious. The freedom of the peoples of the Western world to participate in a rich, varied, and strong institutional life brings to them a strength greater than the strength of fear and torture on which the totalitarian world relies. A vision and a way of life that have endured over 2,000 years will not perish from this earth overnight. The vision did not die when Greece and Rome fell to the barbarian hordes of the East. And the vision shall not die today when the West is again confronted with the massed and brutal military power of the East. Today, for the first time since the War of 1812, we are faced with foreign attack within our borders. The burning of Washington in that war united our people in their defense. Today, atomic attack and destruction faces our cities. We must stand united. It is no time for recrimination. It is no time for division. It is no time for politics. If we stand firm and united, the sweep of the historic forces expressed in the Declaration of Human Rights and the movement of the peoples of the world to attain those rights will not be stopped. At the end of his first term of office as president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, with prophetic insight, said, "There is a mysterious cycle in human events. To some generations, much is given. Of other generations, much is expected. This generation of Americans has a rendezvous with destiny. In this world of ours, in other lands, there are some people who in times past have lived and fought for freedom and seem to have grown too weary to carry on the fight. Our only success can stir their ancient hope. It is this ancient hope of man of which the Declaration of Human Rights becomes the beacon in a dark and sorry world. It is the voice of Walt Whitman, the poet of democracy, speaking. Each of us inevitable. Each of us limitless. Each of us with his or her right upon the earth. Each of us allowed the eternal purports of the earth. Each of us here as divinely as any is here. By God, I will accept nothing which all of us cannot have their counterpart on the same terms. The peoples of Western Europe are tired of war. The peoples of Asia are tired of war. The peoples of this hemisphere do not find in war their way of life. If there is any one cause of the communist onslaught that now confronts us, it is our precipitate disarmament and return to the ways of peace after World War II, while the communist world continued implacably to build its military strength. These times of war are indeed times to try the souls of men. But united in defense, free peoples will once again show the strength that lies in freedom and in societies dedicated to the preservation of human rights.